It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 358, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Stop the presses. Men's basketball is winning the games they should and is now on track to potentially make the NIT. Matt and I discuss what's behind the turnaround and whether this season can be classified as a success if they continue winning the games they should. Also on the show, the Alliance of American Football, Kalani's recruiting record, and is melted ice cream a soup? This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Join the conversation with us at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout and listen to us right now. There's a lot of opinions about television shows out there, Matt.
Yeah, that's a whole can of worms. You open that up, that's a can of worms.
It's been opened, so let's start straight out of the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
This one came from Twitter. You can tweet at us, at BYU_RightShot. This is from Christian Draper, at TheGorilla1. That seems like a name. Have I said this before with him? That seems like a name that would be hard to get. TheGorilla1.
But why not just TheGorilla, right?
It's so, probably taken already.
Let's find out. Let's take a look. The gorilla.
Of course it's taken.
But it's not.
It's probably a gorilla. Like at a zoo, you know?
Like at a zoo, really? It's not a gorilla in the wild?
No. I think they'd have a much harder time getting on Twitter.
So the handle at the gorilla is... It's French. So I have no idea what this guy's doing, but he's not a gorilla.
Wait a second. You took French in high school. What do you mean you don't know what he's doing? You can't read a little French?
I took French in high school.
If it was in Russian, you'd be able to decipher it for us.
His pin tweet says, I've made some mistakes in my life. Nothing something. I don't know what the something is.
If only there was an easy way to translate nowadays.
I know individual words here, but
okay.
I have no idea.
Moving on. Don't care about the gorilla.
No longer interesting. All right.
Nope. No longer. It was
mildly
before we started.
To begin with.
All right. So this is what Christian had to say. Just finished listening to last week's show, and I'll say this. Making a murderer is garbage.
Wow.
Come on, Christian. Don't hold back. Give us your honest opinion.
Did he get tweeted back for this? Because Making a Murderer is like a pretty popular show, I feel like.
I don't know. Let's look on the Twitter machine here and see if anybody responded to him. No one has responded to that tweet. No one has responded to it.
Okay.
He doesn't have a lot of followers. Oh, he does have a gorilla in his avatar picture. So there you go.
See, he's doing it right. This French guy has no clue what he's doing.
He's also an attorney? I swear, half of the people that listen to us are attorneys.
I don't understand it.
Maybe just half of America is attorneys. I don't know. So he said, but I'll recommend a funny show called Spy. It's a British show. You can find it on Hulu. Only lasted 2 years, but freaking hilarious. All right, Christian, we got a reco. But... Matt, you don't trust recos unless you know other shows that they like. So, Christian...
Yeah, I'm going to need a little bit more information.
All right, Christian. So Matt is asking for you to tweet at us a couple of other of your favorite shows so Matt can understand. You know, and last time we talked about The Office as a funny show. We talked about... What else did we talk about? Family Ties. Arrested Development.
Family Ties.
Yeah, Family Ties was great.
You're putting Family Ties in the same bucket with The Office and Arrested Development.
And Seinfeld. Family Ties is an amazing show. Stop it.
I'm not saying it isn't a great show, but it you don't feel like one of these things is not like the other when you list
it's a
Family
different.
Ties,
it's different.
Arrested Development, and it's what was the other one? The Office?
Yeah, it's a different era, right? There weren't shows like that in the 80s.
Not like the other.
There's not an Arrested Development of the 80s.
Doesn't belong.
All right, buddy. All right, let's go now to the CougarFan.com, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, men's volleyball, two more losses against top five teams, granted, but they have only won one set in their last four games, all losses, as I mentioned, last four matches. They're now 4-4 after winning their first four. They've dropped four. Coming up this week in Provo, a little bit easier of a week. They have Concordia unranked and then number 14 USC coming to the Smithfield House. I feel like this is a turning point for the men's team. This is a week where they need to pick up two victories. They need to reassert themselves, and I am worried about when you only over four matches can only manage one set. Yes, all four of those teams were really good, but it makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, and that's hard. Even if the teams you're up against are really good, right? When you feel like you're losing a lot, that can compound itself and pile on.
Yeah, well, if
you got to come out strong.
3 weeks ago, we were talking about this team maybe challenging for the for a national title, right?
We might have been a little bit ahead of ourselves.
A little premature. Women's basketball, Matt, they split with St. Mary's and Pepperdine. They've got road games coming up at Portland, at Gonzaga this week. They're 18-6. Still have a shot, I think, at the tournament if they can play better here in the next few weeks going into the WCC tournament. Matt, baseball, BYU baseball, we don't talk about this one a lot, but the team is looking to bounce back. They were WCC champs, made it into the tournament, and went fairly deep in 2017, and last year they were just kind of fizzled out. They have three games against Northwestern in Mesa, Arizona this week, and then on Monday, I believe, they play Cal. And that's, I mean, I feel bad for every college baseball team that's not in a warm weather location, because they end up playing the first month of the season on the road and in tournaments.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know, I mean, I have a coworker whose husband played for the University of Minnesota. This was years ago. Played for the University of Minnesota, and he said it was just like, and people, you know, how people talk about, you know, the bowl season or if the college football playoff. I mean, these guys, he basically didn't go to class for almost a month every year. Right?
It's fine. He's a student athlete. He'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. And he was, by the way. He graduated.
Attaboy.
Shocker. All right. Jaren Hall, who plays football, he has earned his role, says Darnell Dixon of the Daily Herald, friend of the podcast, Darnell Dixon. And he has impressed the baseball coaching staff and has earned a role. The coaching staff has basically said he'll probably get some spot starts, be a pinch runner, and a defensive replacement in the outfield this year. But I'd say that's a good sign because, you know, they don't have to put him on the team, right? I mean, He was in the recruiting process. This article points out that he was very clear with Kalani Sitake that he wanted to be a two-sport athlete, and Sitake has been supportive of that. Matt, how do you feel about Jaren Hall playing baseball?
I guess it's great. I mean, we talked about this a little bit a couple of weeks ago. You know, I think I've calmed down on my spring ball fears. I think they'll figure it out and make it work. But I think it's a great opportunity for somebody who's able to make both teams, to be able to play two sports in college. It's pretty unique and pretty cool. You know, and then at some point, you know, if you're, you know, what's his face, you know, that kid that you might have heard of out of Oklahoma, you're going to have to make a decision at some point, but there's no reason to force that decision now.
So let me ask you this question. Let's bounce to Mr. Murray. If you're Kyler Murray, it's Kyler, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm not making that up. If you're Kyler Murray, what's your decision?
I'd go to baseball.
So you don't try to become a starting NFL quarterback?
If I'm Kyler Murray with his physical makeup and skills, no. And there's a couple reasons, actually, too. I think, and I haven't done the research on this, but I'm sure maybe you're doing it right now. I think that if you're that highly rated of a baseball prospect and your chances of getting into the bigs quickly is high, you go take that money where your chance for injury is less and your opportunity to be a professional athlete making that kind of money is longer. And that's where you go. Yeah. That would be my advice if he were to ask me. Now, you know, he's come out and made this statement, you know, I'm 100% dedicated to playing football. I want to be a franchise quarterback. But, of course, he's going to say that because he's trying to get the A's to pay him more money.
No, the A's are done. The A's are done. They're not going to pay him any more money. He's going to have to pay them back. You know, I think here's the thing, right? You're totally right about baseball. If he plays baseball, the chances of him having, if he ever makes the majors, the chances of him having a long career in baseball are much greater than the NFL just because of injuries and also because a lot of quarterbacks who are great college quarterbacks flame out in the NFL, right? And you know, you don't have to look very far for other guys that have flamed out, right? You know, so that being said, he'll get drafted, yes, but I think he's making a mistake. Not based on that. I just don't know that he's that high of an NFL prospect that I would give up the sure major league roster spot that he had as a first round of MLB draft choice.
I mean, don't you make more guaranteed money in baseball, right?
Oh, yeah, it's all guaranteed.
He's not a franchise quarterback.
Well, I mean, he could be, right? But he's not viewed as that today.
Right. Well, if I'm a scout and I'm asked to assess him, that's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out for him. But, I mean, sometimes there's something to be said for chasing your dream. And if your dream is the NFL, you know, then you're going to make what is, you know, according to Excel spreadsheets, an irrational decision.
Right. Yep. And that's the thing, right? I don't know. In the end, I don't know where he'll be drafted, right? It's hard to say. Some people have him as a first rounder. Right. But if you look at the quarterback list of prospects, I don't know. This isn't like a banner year of quarterbacks, is it? You're going to take ahead of him Drew Locke?
Yeah, it's not a bumper crop of quarterbacks.
Yeah. So maybe we'll see. Anyway, who cares? This isn't a Oklahoma Sooners podcast.
But moving I think the on. Concept is the same, right? And if I'm Jaren Hall, at this phase in Jaren Hall's progression, what he's got to do is maximize his options.
Yeah.
Okay. And so he's from a scholarship standpoint, he's fine. But if he's trying to get to the next level somewhere, he's going to have to figure out where the right fit and where the best fit for that is. And if he can make the balance work, then all power to him.
Well,
and figure it out.
And you never there's no guarantee he ever starts at BYU as a quarterback, right? I mean, with Wilson on the roster, with every year or two, there's going to be another highly touted quarterback recruit walking in the building, right?
Right.
I think because he's the number two quarterback, he's likely to get a shot at some point, right? Because of injury and effectiveness or something, right? Or just timing. But there's no guarantee of that, right? There's been a lot of backup quarterbacks at BYU who never got the starting job, right? You know, with clearer pass than even he has. So Shane McDougal had this to ask off of Twitter, and that's at McDougal Shane. Says, are Cosmo and the Cougarettes the most interesting thing about BYU sports at the moment, or is it Jaren Hall? Matt, more interesting, Jaren Hall playing baseball and football at the same time, or Cosmo tearing it up in another dance routine with the Cougarettes?
This is going to be an unpopular take, but like, we've seen the Cosmo thing.
Oh, stop it. It's amazing every time I see it.
It is. It's amazing, right? But we already, it's not a surprise. The Jaren Hall thing, like, is a surprise and could turn out to be even more a surprise as it continues to develop. So I'm saying that it's more interesting, but I'm not convinced that either of those two things are the most interesting thing going on with BYU sports.
Okay, right? What's the most interesting thing going on about BYU sports right now, buddy?
I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited about women's basketball right now. I feel like there's a story there to follow.
How about the turnaround of men's basketball, which we'll talk about here in a minute?
Yeah, there's and the turnaround. There you go. That's a pretty interesting storyline.
Yeah. If I'm picking between Jaren Hall and Cosmo, the fact that Jaren Hall is playing two Division I sports, I think is more interesting than Cosmo. Though I find it awesome every time Cosmo gets, you know, goes viral. I think it's fantastic for BYU. I think it's great. Matt, the track team, both the men and women are now ranked 16, have some meets coming up. They're both doing very well. Matt, something that you wanted to talk about, and now it's your new obsession, is the Alliance of American Football.
Yes.
So you start texting me the other night, and you are watching a football game. And I'll be honest, I had read about the Alliance of the American Football, but I had kind of forgotten that it was starting. And you say you're watching a game, and I thought, oh my gosh, his football withdrawals have hit a really disturbing level, is what I thought. And
what did you think I was watching?
I don't know. I thought maybe you were watching like some high school all-star game or something. But you pointed out to me that the Salt Lake Stallions have five former BYU players on their team, including Jordan Leslie, Tanner Baldry, Tooney Kanuch, Handsome Tanny. Oh gosh, why do I even
Handsome Tanielu? Come on,
there
man.
There you go. And Micah Hanneman, right? Are all on the Salt Lake Stallions. And you watched this game, Matt. Tell us about the Alliance of American Football. What'd you think?
Well, I kind of stumbled onto it, right? So Saturday night, we mostly watched the San Diego at San Antonio game. And then by the end of that game, we were all in. We'd kind of decided that the Stallions were going to be our team. So we were sure Sunday night. But the viewing options were a little bit weird because I'm streaming and I don't have NFL Network. So I had to watch off of their website, which was just a straight feed of the game. Like, we had no announcers. It was just a feed of footage. But for me, I mean, you look at the players on these rosters. You think you listed some of the BYU guys. There's a couple guys from the University of Utah, some people who have played meaningful snaps in the NFL that are here. You know, but it's a lot of practice squad type guys that are looking for another opportunity, trying to get some game film put together, and feel like this is a better opportunity to put some tape. To get some tape distributed to a wider range of NFL teams, rather than you sit on a practice squad in Miami, the only coaches that see you are the Miami coaches, right?
Right.
So, and they've got some big name coaches, Dennis Erickson coaching the Salt Lake team. And I think that the Salt Lake team, just my real quick observation is that the offense needs a little bit of work. I'm not sure I'm super excited about the quarterbacks. Played a couple different guys. The starter had a hamstring issue. I'd like to see more of the BYU guys, right? So I think the Jordan Leslie had a great game, caught a touchdown. Micah Hanneman looked okay, in the defensive backfield, and Tanielu didn't get in until late. And I don't remember seeing Kanuch. What's interesting is that they've made it easy to pick your team, right? So what they've done is they've taken these eight teams and the players are allocated based on where they competed in college. So the Salt Lake Stallions have, you know, University of Utah, BYU, some Pac-12 schools, Colorado State, Idaho,
Boise,
you know, that
State.
Kind of, yeah. So it's like that. It's like that stretch. But what that does is you flip this thing on, and if you've got a college team, which really any football fan does have some college team that they're interested in, right? You automatically know where to go to which team you want to link up with. Now, they've not allocated every single college because there's not a team in the Midwest. And so,
yeah,
you know,
Salt Lake is the only team, cold weather team in the league.
So then they've split the NFL and the CFL up and just handed each of these AAF teams like some NFL teams. So if you played, if your last roster, you was so if you played football at Duke or Purdue, they're not allocated to a team. So when you go, so now it's what practice squad you were on. So if you played, you know, if you were on the Broncos practice squad and that's where you were last, then you're going to Salt Lake. And that's the team you can sign with.
All now, right,
if
so you
100%. Anyway, so that's how they end up with all the BYU guys. So now all the BYU guys in one place. It's easy who I cheer for, right?
Yeah, so percent chance that you buy some type of paraphernalia with Salt Lake Stallions on it.
You mean a second piece of paraphernalia?
You already have one?
No, I haven't. Since Saturday? I haven't placed the order yet, but we were picking out t-shirts earlier today. They're coming to San Antonio. Salt the Stallions are going to be in San Antonio on Saturday, March 23rd, and we are seriously discussing driving to San Antonio to watch the game.
Of course, sure.
Like, it's a three-hour drive or something. But it's real. It's football. It's not the NFL. But it's not total garbage football either. And so I enjoyed watching it. We'll see if the interest sticks. I'd really like to see the team succeed. What I like about what they're doing is they're not trying to go right up against the NFL. They're trying to complement the NFL. It feels like, you know, trying to build a little bit of a farm or minor league system that feeds into the NFL. So I think they're doing some of the right things.
Stop it. Are you saying
I want to see it. I want it to be good. I need more football. I want it to be good.
Are you saying that it's potentially a solid business plan?
It's better than the other models we've seen come out for other football.
XFL.
Even all the way back to the USFL. USFL, you and I talked about this. They went with the big money contracts.
Yeah, yeah.
Too big, too early, you know, and tried to go right up against the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, there was no...
The XFL is like the WWE, guys. It's not even real.
You didn't have... You need revenue streams that match your cost structure, right? And if you go too big on your cost structure, you know, the Women's Soccer League had that same problem too, right? Not the current one, but a few iterations ago, because they were too spread out geographically, right? And the travel costs kill you, right? And if you look at the way the MLS built themselves, now the difference with this is I don't know what the end game is, right? Like, MLS was trying to become a major league American sport, right? And I think they've successfully done that, right?
Right, but it was a bumpy road at first.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. This, like you said, it seems more like we're going to create a off-season winter league, right? A minor league deal. I think their biggest problem is going to be quarterbacks, right? Because if you're an NFL quarterback with any chance of playing, you're not going to be in this league, right? So it's practice squad guys and you know, fringe, you know, roster guys. And you're going to have terrible quarterback play. There aren't even enough good quarterbacks to fill NFL rosters, right? So like you talked about the Stallions, I think we're going to see a lot of that. But
these offenses only had like 6 weeks to throw this together.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was a lot of offensive struggling this weekend.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think it was Jake Heaps that tweeted out that there were the coaches in Seattle used to tell him that they wish they could get him more meaningful reps and a little bit more time to develop. But there was no NFL Europe when he was trying to come out, and there was nowhere else for him to get that. So at least from that standpoint, he feels like this is an opportunity for players in that space to get some more meaningful playing time in and further develop their game and maybe take their shot for whatever that's worth, right? That's just one person's opinion.
Well, I did have a Frankfurt Galaxy t-shirt at one point.
There you go. Do you want me to order? Do you want me to place and put something in the order with us for Salt Lake something?
Oh, and a Barcelona Dragons hat.
I remember that hat.
And a Barcelona Dragons hat. I got the Frankfurt Galaxy when I was in Frankfurt, Germany, on a trip a long time ago.
How did you land on Barcelona there? Right, like I know exactly where to go with these teams, but how do you pick? How do you pick an NFL?
They were
Europe?
The Dragons. I don't know.
Dragons are cool. They breathe
dragons
fire.
Dragons are cool. I'm a fantasy geek. They had a team named the Dragons. It wasn't that hard. Matt Jimmer. Jimmer had one of his biggest games of the year as the Shanghai Sharks defeated the first place Guangdong Southern Tigers 110-104. This was his stat line. These stat lines are like, they're like video game. 43 points, 9 boards, 5 assists, 4 steals. Wow.
He's on fire.
Yeah, 15 for 29 shooting. So Jimmer continues to Jimmer. So Matt, let's talk about, speaking of basketball, let's talk about basketball. BYU has beat Portland. They beat Portland and Pacific last week, okay? They've got San Diego and Loyola Marymount coming up on the road this week. So we've got four questions that came in that all hit on similar themes. So I'm going to read all four of these questions, and then we're going to dive through them, all right?
All right.
The first one comes from our brother Don, and this is off of Facebook. And if you want to join the conversation on Facebook, you can do it at facebook.com/riseandshout. Considering where the basketball team was a month ago, is making it to the NIT a successful season? Also, if cereal is a soup, does that make melted ice cream a soup as well? Matt, why did we talk about this? Cereal is not a soup, and neither is melted ice cream. It's melted ice cream.
You're not reading his question. His question assumes that cereal is a soup. So if you accept that cereal is a soup, then you probably have to call melted ice cream a soup.
I don't accept it. It's stupid.
But the premise, no, I understand you're trying to disagree with his question on its face, but his question clearly assumes, in a world where cereal is a soup, does that mean melted ice cream is also a soup?
You're not one of the attorneys. Yes. You're not one of the attorneys that listens to this show. You don't get to argue.
I'd be a terrible attorney. Listen to me. This argument is ludicrous. But but it is what his question is saying. So the answer is yes. Unless you can find out some way to classify cereal as a soup that wouldn't include ice cream, which I can't off the top of my head. So
stop. You've just hurt my head. All right. Jeremy Ashton sent us an email. And if you want to send us an email, you can do it riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com.
Hold up. We're going to ignore Don's first question.
We're coming back to it. I already said that. I said that in the intro. We're going
to
read these four questions.
I don't listen to your intro. All right, let's go.
How should we feel as BYU fans that BYU now is in NIT bracketology projections? Okay. Robbie King on Facebook says, has the basketball team actually turned a corner since conference play began? They haven't lost a bad conference game yet, which they seem to do a few times every season. And then Wade Hillam on Facebook says, I still don't know how to feel about this basketball team. I like the emergence of Gavin Baxter and the reemergence of Nick Emery and what they add to both ends of the court. The defense is much improved, but is all a little too late to make it to the postseason. So basically, their questions come down to this, Matt. First, is the NIT at this point a successful season if BYU makes it to the NIT?
Yeah, given where we were and where they are now, sure. Starting from now, yes. I'd say making the NIT is a successful season.
Oh, man, I love Dr. Pepper. All right. Yes, based on where we thought this season would be, no. Right? That was kind of the downside, the low side of where we thought this season might be. Maybe that's not even true, though. Maybe it was kind of the expectation. But to your point, a month ago, I thought making the NIT was not likely at all. So, yes. All right. Second thing, has this team turned a corner to Robbie's question?
I think so. I mean, think about what we both just said.
So, a couple weeks ago, they get blasted by Gonzaga by 30 points. More than that. One of the worst losses, I think the worst home loss in Dave Rose's tenure at BYU. Okay? I believe that's correct. So, I remember seeing the score because I actually didn't stay up. I was not feeling well that weekend and did not stay up. So, I saw the score the next day and I thought, we are so bad at basketball, right? You know, it's just an emotional reaction to a box score. And then Gonzaga proceeds to absolutely dismantle San Francisco and St. Mary's the next week. Just absolutely destroys them, right? Gonzaga is on this amazing run of basically dominating the WCC more than they usually do, okay? So I am now viewing that Gonzaga game very differently based on what's happened. I am now saying Gonzaga is probably just one of the best two teams in the country, probably going to play in the Final Four, and it might be the best Gonzaga team of all time. And we can't judge ourselves off of Gonzaga, right? That's not a fair comparison. You look at what Wade talked about is, we haven't, I mean, Robbie, we haven't lost a bad conference game. That hasn't happened since we joined the WCC. Now, granted, we've got San Diego and LMU this week, so we still have a shot to do it. But I don't know. I'm feeling much better about this team. Obviously, they're not making the NCAA tournament, barring something weird in the WCC tournament. But,
or like a giant change of rules. Or
right, right. Something.
Or 30 teams decide not to participate. Something crazy.
Yeah, something bizarre. And Gavin Baxter's emergence is fantastic. So I'm with them there. So how are you feeling about this team? Are you more interested than you were a month ago?
Oh, I'm absolutely more interested in this team than I was a month ago. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and Baxter's part of it, right? Seeing a young guy who you think could be good for years, that makes people more interested.
Oh, typically. That absolutely breathes new life into a fan base.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not sure Nick Emery has reemerged. I'll be honest. He's had a couple of good games, but I feel like we still got to get more out of him because, boy, was he below average until the last week or so. So
yeah, I'm with you there.
So I'm not as convinced on him. I think, you know, Yoli's playing great basketball. TJ Haws is playing great basketball. Baxter is. Celius is now off the bench a good contributor, which I think is what his role should be, right? And then I'm still not sure why McKay Cannon is playing at all. I mean, if he's not draining threes, he doesn't do much defensively, and he's not a great passer. So I'm not exactly sure why McKinnon is playing as much as he is, and why Hartnett maybe shouldn't be getting more of that playing time. That being said, I'm with you. They're better. San Diego, LMU coming up, and then bigger week the following week with San Francisco and Gonzaga. Matt, BYU is in second place. They control their own destiny to get that coveted second place, so they get those buys, right?
And if you get yourself out of opposite Gonzaga, like it's great. That's a big deal.
And then your path to a potential NCAA berth is you have to win. You're not going to. You need some miracle day against Gonzaga, right? Or somebody else would. So it's not likely, but at least you have one. At least you have a shot, right? Even if it's one in a million, right?
So you're saying there's a chance.
I know you're going to do it. So Zach Thornton, that's at Coronado Zach on Twitter, says, what lineup is the best going against Gonzaga? And which one player that must perform at their highest level in order for BYU to beat Gonzaga? I'll be honest, there is no lineup that'll beat Gonzaga. Right? The best lineup, I mean, I just put the best guys on the floor, right? I mean, I want Childs, Haws, Baxter, and probably Hartnett and Emery all on the floor together for most of the game. But they're not going to beat Gonzaga.
Yeah, I don't. And even if I said like what lineup here gives us the best chance, I don't know.
I don't think you can play matchups against Gonzaga. I don't think we have the players to match up with them. Right? Like, I guess Baxter, you know, is long, athletic, and is a pretty good defender, so he helps, right? But, I mean, Gonzaga's loaded, man. Gonzaga's loaded.
Yeah, it's a tall order.
And by the way, I keep seeing national people still bag on Josh Perkins. How is that still a thing? Right? The guy has played in a Final Four and is now, you know, leading maybe the best Gonzaga team ever. He's not the best player on the team, but, you know, he's that veteran presence on one of the best teams ever, and everyone's kind of like, well, you can't go far with him. You can go to the Final Four with him.
That seems pretty far. Seems pretty far.
You know, not that I'm some Gonzaga or Josh Perkins fanboy or anything, but... All right, so the Evit Man on Twitter. So is it the Vit Man? It's the Vit Man, right? Not the Evit Man. That's at the Vit Man 1.
I thought it was Thievite Man.
Thievite Man. That's good. What's BYU's record this year if Elijah Bryant and Mika had stayed? Is their departure for international basketball on Rose or just the sign of the times? I feel like we've answered this one before. Maybe we haven't. Maybe we've danced around
it. Sign of the times? Like out of the Bible, sign of the times?
Yep. Yep.
The four horsemen of the apocalypse and the two guys who left early.
So what's their record? Let's go after that, Matt. They might be only a one-loss West Coast Conference team. I think you've only lost to Gonzaga at this point, and you win a few more in the non-conference schedule. So call it that's two more wins. That's 18. Call it 21. Maybe we're at 21 wins with those guys, and we're a NCAA tournament team. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not going to go as far as to say which games I think we win and lose here. I think San Francisco is still a tough matchup.
No, we beat San Francisco.
Still. But a lot of this non-conference stuff, I think there's a bunch of wins you pick up back in there. And yeah. I agree with you, though. You're talking NCAA tournament if both those guys are still around.
Yeah, and we have danced around this one before. I don't know that we can throw this on Rose, unless there's something we don't know about where these guys just had to get away from the program because they were tired of the program, and there were some rumors of that with Mika. I would say this is unprecedented, and I quite frankly, I don't know that it's a trend either, right? It's hard to say, but if you had told me that, you know, Elijah Bryan and Mika were going to leave early to play international basketball, right? Like, I wouldn't have believed that was going to happen, right? Like,
yeah, it's, the idea is kind of laughable, right?
You know, so a lot of Rose's issues on this year's team is this is not the group that was supposed to be playing together. Right? Yep. You look at that current roster, you put Bryan and Mika on it, and that means that Yoeli Childs is not the prime big man. He's kind of that second big man, right? Hawes would be like a playmaker on that team, but not the biggest playmaker because that's probably Elijah Bryant, right? And guys like Hartnett, Baxter probably had a less role than what he's had. Celius probably doesn't play very much, right? Cannon probably never plays, right? So it bumps everybody down, and all of a sudden this team goes from not being a deep team to a deep team by adding those two guys.
And that's really what makes the difference, is the way that that would impact depth.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And they're both really good players, right? Well, let's talk about football, Matt. We got so many questions today, so it was great. Though we end up didn't get a lot of recruiting questions, though, interestingly enough. But we're going to talk about recruiting. So Gary Payne on Twitter had this to say, at FastBreakGP, I prefer BYU official navy blue to the old royal blue. There, I said it. Please don't think less of me. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. I don't know where this came from, Matt, because we didn't ask anything about
it. It's like
this.
A totally unnecessary admission, right? Like, he clearly feels bad about it.
As he should feel bad about it. Because
here's my question. When he says the old royal blue, he's talking about the actual old royal blue, because the royal blue we throw on now is not the royal blue that the team wore in the 1980s. It's not the same color.
It isn't?
No. Hmm. This color is more closer to like a powder blue. It's a little bit brighter than, like, if you go back and look at like the, like I'm looking right here. I've got this Sports Illustrated cover from when Ty Detmer won the Heisman Trophy. That blue in that shirt is not the same blue. It's not the same.
Okay.
It's a darker blue they used to wear. The royal blue that we're using now it's like a brighter or more closer to powder. I don't know.
You're full of crap.
It's a different blue.
I'm looking at a picture of Robbie Bosco from the national championship year, and it looks exactly the same color. I've got it right up next to some uniforms we wore this year. I mean, obviously the style is way different, right, of the jerseys. They were much looser and all that stuff. I think you're full of crap, man. I have no idea what you're talking about.
You're crazy.
I don't have no idea what you're talking
about. It's not the same color.
Yeah.
It's not the same color. No, it is not the same color.
It's not exactly the same color.
Did you say I'm full of crap? Is that what you just said?
It's not exactly the same color, but the current color isn't anywhere near powder blue. I don't even know what you're talking about.
No, the one that we wear now when we put on the Royals?
Yeah.
It's a much brighter blue.
Hmm. I don't think that's accurate.
I think you're not accurate. Your face isn't accurate.
Yeah, my face is 100% accurate. That's not true. Anyway, you might be right. It's probably not the exact same color because, you know, palettes change over time. But I just, you know, back to his original question, you can like whatever you want, Gary, but just because you like it doesn't mean you're right.
But is there really a right and a wrong to colors of football uniforms? Yes, there is.
The royal blue is iconic and makes us different. The navy blue makes us look like freaking Utah State.
And everybody else.
It's boring. It's not that I dislike navy blue. I like navy blue. The problem is everybody else wears it, right? And BYU royal blue meant something. It was your brand. Right.
Yeah.
And the Vitman responded to him and said, you know, like they changed it to sell more merchandise, which is true. And it worked right back then. It sold more merchandise. But something has changed with American fandom since the 90s, which is people. I mean, when we grew up in Boston, how many people wore Red Sox stuff?
Oh, yeah. We've talked about
Patriots stuff. Nobody wore it, even when they were good. Right? There were very few fandoms in the U.S. where people wore the colors, especially if they were like garish bright colors, right? And so no doubt the Navy helped sell merchandise back then. I don't know that that's true today anymore. I think if they were royal blue, it wouldn't affect merchandise sales because we're in a totally different era where people wear all this stuff all the time. How many BYU t-shirts do you have in your closet?
Like 4,000, way right. more than my wife wants me to have.
Okay, how many BYU t-shirts did you have as a kid?
A couple.
Does your son have more than you did at his age?
Yeah, as long as my wife doesn't listen to the podcast, I'll go and admit that he's got a lot of BYU shirts.
Okay, all right. So how many BYU is your son a more passionate fan than where you were of BYU football when you were his age?
Not even close.
That's my point. Like, we were BYU football obsessed as kids, and we hardly had any stuff, right? It's the merchandise.
I did have that sweet starter jacket at one point.
You did, which was...
That thing was awesome.
And I took it when you left on your mission.
That thing was so
sweet. And you outgrew it, too, because I...
Because I was bigger than you by the time I left on my mission.
Yes, you were. Not substantially. So anyway, I'm totally joking. Gary can like whatever he wants, and I don't actually care that much. But of what Gary likes, but I would say if I were in charge of BYU branding, marketing, and the uniform color, it's royal blue because that's and maybe people could say, well, that's not true anymore, right? It's been too long for the brand to be connected to royal blue anymore, and that actually may be true at this point, right? Because you'd probably ask a non-BYU college football fan what color BYU was, and they're probably going to say navy blue at this point, right?
Yeah, I guess they probably will. But you know what would really help the navy blue like stand out if they could? There's things they can do to make the navy blue different than the Utah States and the Michigans and just everybody else when you Google navy blue uniforms who pops up. You can do something to make it a little bit different. You add a pop of tan.
Oh, stop it. Stop
a little tan it. Stripe like a cougar tail down the side of the pants.
How about like a bib of white?
Yeah, like a white bib. Or let's take the Y that everybody's been using on everything for a gazillion years and let's retool it and put like a Saturn ring around it. That's perfect. And it'll be tan.
Yeah.
People love tan. We can sell lots of golf gear if it's tan.
Yep.
Tan. Khaki. Khaki. It's like what are you gonna slap khakis on these guys?
That's right. That's right.
Play football in khakis?
Yeah, who hasn't played football in khakis?
Tan stripe is the worst thing that happened to BYU ever.
It's terrible.
Like, and I'm not talking about just BYU sports.
Yeah, no, it's the worst thing ever. So, Matt, let's talk about recruiting. Okay, so signing day was last week. It was the day after. We haven't really talked about recruiting a lot so far this year. So there was an article in the Deseret News by friend of the podcast, Dick Harmon. He says, why Kalani Sitake believes recruiting to BYU is more simple when narrowed down to the basics. That's the title of the article. The article is actually about why Kalani Sitake is such a big people person. It's more like a personality profile, if you read the article, than really anything about recruiting. Okay. But there are some nuggets in there in the article about recruiting, including Kalani talking about them finding the right people for the program, academics, but even more importantly, the honor code, and that he's just not going to recruit people unless they're willing to make a commitment to the honor code. Okay. What's your take on Kalani's quotes about recruiting to BYU?
I don't know that he has much of a choice other than to do it that way. And it's tough to compare recruiting classes over time because circumstances change. And BYU can be very reactionary in this space. When you have a couple of guys who get themselves into some trouble that starts to feel a little bit high profile, starters, say starters at the running back position, you have to start thinking about the way that you're doing this and who you're talking to. You can't get wrapped around the axle on numbers of stars on these guys. And I
Well,
think we've got to give Satake space to figure that out.
I mean, Croton didn't worry about the honor code, recruiting to the honor code, and it got him fired, right?
Right.
So I'm totally with you. I mean, I don't know what other choice Satake has, but to go into these people's houses and say, listen, even if you're a member of the church, I need you to commit to this honor code thing, right? Because you will be under a microscope at BYU as an athlete. And people are going to look at you. And if you do anything against the honor code, it's going to, I mean, it might be on Twitter before you're even done doing it, right? So you can't, I don't know what else Satake can do, right? I mean, I think he's taking the right tactic, from my perspective. Now, let's look at his recruiting class here. Well, before we get into that class itself, let's look at the ranking, okay? According to 24/7 Sports, BYU was 79th recruiting class, ESPN 70th, okay? Since Satake has been here, that's about where they've been, somewhere between mid to high 60s to low 70s, okay? That has been his recruiting classes. That is less on average than where Bronco Mendenhall was as a recruiter, okay? All right, and we now have enough data that we've got a few years to see Satake and his staff. Satake was billed as a recruiter, right? That he had done a great job at Utah and Oregon State as a recruiter. Matt, I'm a little worried about the recruitment because I look at these rankings and stars aren't everything, but they do have a decent correlation to on-field success. And I kind of feel like if you're going to drop from a team that's usually in the 50s recruiting ranking to somebody that's usually in the 70s, that talent gap is going to lead to gaps on the field. And we haven't felt it yet because most of the people that are playing meaningful snaps, not all of them, because a lot of freshmen played last year, are still people that were recruited by Bronco because of the missions and such. Matt, am I overreacting to recruiting rankings?
Yes. Yes, you are. You're overreacting.
Your face is overreacting.
My face might be overreacting, but I hear what you're saying about the change in the numbers, and you look at that and you see, you start in 2014, yet you're at 62. 2015, you're at 50. 2016, you're 57. And then there's this drop to this 70 range, right? Now, but what I think would be interesting, and maybe at some point somebody goes into this, but what is really the difference in the programs that are in that range of around 60 and the program that's in that range of around 70? Like, what is really the step off there in the program success, right?
I can tell you.
Difference, is it the difference between a team that's ranked 10th in the country and a team that's ranked 25th? So give me some examples of teams that sit in that space. How big is that gap?
Okay, so teams in the 60s, Washington State this year, okay? Kansas, but of course they got a new coach, so that one's weird, so you may need to throw that one out, right, this year, because we'll find out more next year when Les Miles, where they're going to sit. Memphis, Texas Tech, Rutgers, okay? Other teams in the 70s, okay? Marshall, Toledo, Louisville, that's in a mess. East Carolina, North Texas, Louisiana, USF, Cincinnati, Troy, Southern Miss, and us. Is it, to your point, if you read those lists, it doesn't necessarily jump off the page that, man, you got to be in the 60s instead of the 70s, right? Once you get above the 60s, though, you start seeing teams like UCF, Pitt, Georgia Tech, Boise State, you know, teams that are clearly a cut above some of the teams I just read, right?
So there's some type of a cut around 70, which is where we appear to be hovering.
Yeah, I think there's a cut, and each year it's going to be vary, right? Like the ESPN rankings in the 24/7, if we added two or three of these other sites, like this year, BYU's 70th in ESPN and 79th in 24/7 sports, right? If you go back to the 2016 class, which many thought was quite a class for BYU, 24/7 sports has that at BYU was top 50, 49th, and ESPN had them as 57th, right? But if you go to 2015, it's an interesting one. ESPN had BYU as 50th, and 24/7 sports has it as 65th. So, you know, bolstering your comments, these rating services can't even agree on how good these classes are, right?
And the swings are so big that it's hard to tell really what you have there.
Okay, fair enough. But fair enough.
Let me ask you this question. Do you like Zach Wilson?
I do like Zach Wilson.
Do you know why Zach Wilson is in Provo?
Because Kyle Whittingham's an idiot.
And not in Boise. No. Not why he's in Provo instead of Salt Lake. Why he's in Provo instead of Boise.
Kalani Sitake.
Correct.
Jeff Grimes. Right?
So, yeah, I mean, I think you could list off a couple of guys. Kyrie Tonga. Do you know why Kyrie Tonga, who puts offensive linemen on roller skates, is in Provo right now?
Because of Kalani Sitake.
So there's a lot of anecdotal evidence here that makes me look at the numbers for these past few seasons and say, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and trust Sitake and the process right now. Because he's gone, and the previous regime did not bring Zach Wilson to Provo. Their numbers were higher, but look at what the quarterback string looked like.
The previous regime got Taysom Hill to leave Stanford. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but they Zach Wilson was a three-star quarterback. They got Taysom Hill and Tanner Mangum and Jake Heaps, all four or five-star QBs to come. So I hear what you're saying about Zach, but...
Do those guys decide not to come to Provo with this under Sitake? Do you lose those guys with the current staff?
No, maybe not. No on Tanner, because he was a BYU guy for life, right? So Tanner's coming.
And Taysom originally went to Stanford and changed his mind during the mission.
Correct. So who knows?
So I don't. I'm not ready to chalk that up to Bronco.
I mean, on Taysom. I have no idea on Taysom. You know, I don't have enough insight there. Jake Heaps, again, he wasn't necessarily a given to come to BYU either.
But Bronco didn't even want Heaps.
Well, that's the narrative, but somebody on his staff did. My problem with the Kalani Sitake is a great recruiter narrative is not that it's not true. It's that recruiting is not about just the head coach, right? It's about assistant coaches and the connections they make with these recruits. You know, obviously Sitake, you've got a couple of anecdotal stories about Sitake, you know, bringing people into the program. And I don't doubt that those stories are true. My question isn't about Sitake, really. It's about Sitake's staff, right? And does he have a great recruiting staff? And right now, the numbers say no. that they are probably not as good a recruiting staff as Broncos staff, based on these rankings. I know they're kind of all over the place, but if you average them out, Bronco had higher rated classes than Satake does, right?
Well, but I think there's two pieces of this to me. And one is the piece I was arguing about before. It's the people piece, right? It's the, can you convince a player, a good athlete, to come to Provo? And I think that there's some skill there. And I'm not as worried about that piece. But I think the second piece, which kind of ties into what you're saying here, is can you accurately identify talent? And that's where the wider staff becomes so much more important. Is, are you targeting the right guys? Like, you can be very good at convincing people to come to Provo, but if you're not convincing the right players, it's not going to help you very much.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that I think the jury's really still out on. And the problem with a place like BYU is so many of these guys go on missions.
Yeah.
That it's difficult to know how much data you need to really come to a conclusion on it.
Now, all of that said, Matt, despite what the rankings say, which kind of make this year and last year almost equal in their class strength, right? I feel way more excited about this year's class than I did about last year's.
Agreed.
So I look at last year's class. I don't think there was anybody in that class. I mean, the star rating would say this too. I don't think you had anybody like Conover in last year's class, okay? And you look at the three stars, I think there's a bunch of three stars in here who will end up being very, very good, potentially star players at BYU, right? Mm-hmm. There's the lineman who's from your neck of the woods, Brock Gunderson, that you look at his film and you just watch him and go, holy cow. He just crushes
people. I mean, I've watched him play plenty in person, and yeah, he just crushes
people, right? You look at Cade Albright, the linebacker out of California, and I've watched, you know, some of his tape, and you look at some of these guys and you go, I'm very excited about a lot of these, and I feel like it's a much deeper class. Now, obviously the recruiting agencies disagree with me, and that's fine. They cover this way more than I do, right, on a broad scale. I just really pay attention to the BYU guys, right? But the other piece that I think is missed in here, though he's listed, is Eric Ellison, the cornerback. We're already deep there, and I look at somebody like him and look at that tape that of him, and he came out of, you know, the junior college ranks. I think you look at that, and I'm like, holy cow, we're going to have you throw him in there, and we're going to have a massively good defensive backfield next year, right?
Yep.
And anyway, so I look at this, and that being said, I'm pretty excited about some of these guys. And I think, several of them are going on missions, so we won't see them for a couple of years anyway, including Gunderson, right? So,
yeah.
You know, it'll be a few years before we see some of these guys. But, you know, in the end, I'm with you. We got to give Kalani Sitake time to find his groove as a head coach and a recruiter. I just think it does worry me a little bit, these rankings. It does worry me a little bit.
Yeah, but I'm with maybe it was who was it? Was Geoff? Anyway, somebody who you know we've interacted with a little bit, who basically said, "Look, the proof will be in the pudding. Like if these players go out and win games, and I don't care how many stars any of them have."
Oh no, for sure. And if you look at the recruiting rankings, I mean, the classic example of this is Boise State. Okay, Boise State has, over the last 20 years, outperformed their recruiting rankings, right? Right? I mean,
yeah.
they have consistently outperformed. They're a 50 type of recruiting team. They're usually around 50, give or take. And they're consistently a top 25 team, right? And then you look at programs like, I mean, Oregon right now is a top 10 recruiting school. Do you feel like Oregon's a top 10 team?
Negative.
Right? So I get it. I mean, there is a correlation between these recruiting rankings and success, but it's not a perfect correlation, right? It's not causation, right? You still have to coach the student athletes in the case of Alabama, Georgia, and some of the other ones, sometimes when they just become interested in a guy, you'll see him go from 3 to 4 stars, right? Just because, you know, an Alabama coach showed up at a game, right? So the system is broken and weird anyway. But like you said, if BYU wins, nobody's going to care, right? No one's going to care. Well, Matt, we're out of time this week. Justin Sweeney had a couple of questions for us. One of them is about the NBA All-Star Game. Matt, do you feel qualified at all to talk about the NBA All-Star Game? Did you just yawn?
And you say, what were you talking about? NBA All-Star Game? They still have that?
You know they get to do a schoolyard pick'em for the teams now, right?
Did you? Yeah, I know. It's great because it's awesome because then somebody gets picked last.
I know. It's fantastic. So this is what Justin asks. He is predicting that Team LeBron over Team Giannis in the All-Star game, he's taking 19.5. He's setting the over-under at 19.5, and he's taking LeBron's team at that. I'm with him. I think LeBron's team is absolutely loaded. And his starting lineup is this, Matt.
Kevin Durant. All the guys that he wants to pull to L.A.
Well, probably. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kawhi Leonard. Holy crap. Right? Like, and the other team is great, right? Giannis.
But he got Anthony Davis too, didn't he?
Yeah, Anthony Davis is good. Well, of course, he'll have Anthony Davis playing for him soon enough.
He picked him. Is that tampering?
Yeah, I don't think that's technically tampering. You know, so
he
so anyway.
About it during the draft, though.
I think it's going to be super, super high scoring. I usually end up watching some of this game, but I find the schoolyard pick'em to be much more interesting than geographic, right?
Very, very cool format. They play zero defense in this game.
Zero.
It's a glorified exhibition game / practice. It's just not interesting.
Well, and that's why James Harden loves the game, because he hasn't played defense in his career. So
hey-o!
It's perfect. I'm totally kidding, Beard. Don't come after me or Rockets fans. But he doesn't really play a lot of defense, right?
Does he get extra steps in the All-Star game, too?
Oh, my gosh.
Will he flop? Will he flop in the All-Star game? Or will he just let it go?
LeBron will flop. He just can't turn it off.
Harden is like king of the floppers. I'm sorry.
Who is Harden?
Yes.
They're all flopping.
It's so painful.
It's all flopping now. And it has been for a long time. It doesn't bother. I mean, it does, but it's just something that after a time you just get used to it.
You just accept it, even though 10 years ago you would have been watching this and said, this is garbage.
Yeah.
And then you slowly, they get acclimated to you, and now you think it's good basketball.
It's garbage. Well, it is good basketball. Good basketball is whatever it is. Don't start, like, being the old man, get off the line.
Give me the glory days back in the mid-90s.
Stop it.
None of these players would last 5 minutes
in
the NBA.
Mid-90s was terrible basketball. It was so bad.
Bill Laimbeer grabbing you by the face on your way to the basket and throwing you into the ground.
Think of some of the guys that were good then that defense basically was, I'm going to hold you.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just flat out tackle you.
It was terrible. The NBA is way more entertaining now. Way more
entertaining, like a soap opera.
Oh my!
Hey, did you see Chris Paul's comment? He's now what is he like third or eighth or something on the assist list? And he's like, I'm never going to catch Stockton. I don't know who was keeping stats in Utah, but nobody's going to catch that number. It's like, dude, you missed more games this season than Stockton missed in his whole career. He just played way more basketball than you. That's why you're never going to catch him.
Yeah, Stockton didn't miss games.
Yeah, Paul has literally missed more games this season than Stockton missed his entire career. Like, it's just, it's insane.
Don't get me wrong. Jordan, all that stuff from the 90s, like late 80s, amazing, right? There were some amazing players. I really disliked after the 80s were high flying. I feel like basketball now is more like it was in the 80s. With the Celtics and the Lakers, because it's high flying and they don't allow all that hand checking garbage that they allowed in the 90s with those terrible Pat Riley Knicks teams. Ugh. I hated those
Charles
teams.
Barkley and Charles Oakley getting into it.
Oakley and John Starks and Mark Jackson, you know, hated it.
You know, I saw a highlight video, a Larry Bird highlight video the other day. That guy was savage.
He was awesome.
Larry Bird was just nasty.
And he was
so good.
Just a trash talker, right?
And
he still, and a lot of those guys from the 80s cannot understand this moving teams around to try to win. But I have no problem with that, by the way. You and I have talked about this before on the show.
You go where the good work is.
I do have a little problem now with LeBron going to LA, not for basketball reasons at all, right? Like, I'm going to LA because I want to produce TV shows and whatever. And I'm going to, you know, stab the fans in Cleveland in the heart a second time. But he brought him a title, so maybe
what
that's
more,
okay.
What more do they really want?
Maybe more titles. Matt, Justin also asked a really good question about in 10 years, what would you want, what do we think is going to happen for BYU football? We're going to table that because I'd already lined up that we're going to have a whole show on that topic, Justin. We will throw your question out as like the frame of the show because I'd been thinking of it very similar the way Justin did about, you know, where we think BYU football will be in 10 years. So hold that thought, Mr. Sweeney. Hold that thought.
I can't wait.
And next week, it's the Dante Circle of Hell show.
Oh, geez. I better go get my Reader's Digest or Cliff Notes or whatever
Reader's
it is.
Reader's Digest?
I don't know why I said that.
I don't know why I said that either.
Do they even still publish that?
Reader's Digest? I'm sure they do. It's for old people.
The magazine.
It's like for Dawn.
Still print that?
Dawn probably reads Reader's Digest.
He probably does.
In the bathroom. Because that's where everybody read Reader's Digest, right?
Wow. That's a lot of information, Adam.
It's not a lot of information. It's just a fact. It's just a fact.
Sure.
It's in everybody's bathroom.
You know what? You keep hammering this point about the bathroom. I think you need to drive.
I'm not hammering any point. What are you talking about? I said it twice. How's that hammering a point?
I don't know. I'm trying to give you an opportunity to move on, but that's cool.
All right. Well, anyway, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We haven't mentioned it before, but you can always, if you want to support the podcast financially, you can go to patreon.com/riseandshout. We've got a bunch of patrons right now, and we appreciate each and every one of them. And you could join that group for as little as $2 a month. To support the podcast. Again, of course, the podcast is free. We're not going to charge for it, but if you want to support the podcast, you can go ahead and do that there. Otherwise, Matt, that's all I got. I'm covered in snow here in Minnesota. I shoveled 3 times today, so I'm tired, and I should probably go to bed now.
It's warm. I had to roll up my sleeves. I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt. Probably going to go walk the dog real quick.
Oh, good. Good for you. All right, well, I'll punch you in the face later.
That sounds great.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!